Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is sponsored in part by Prince Associates, Send in the Clowns, the Phoenix Tube Company, CelebrityTrips.com, the law firm of Decalator Cohen and DePrisco, Solomon Jewelers, and Relish Restaurant of Kings Park. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
Joining us now is a man over a 22-year career, compiled 314 wins, 3,534 strikeouts, had an ERA of 3.11. He was selected to the Baseball's Hall of Fame in 1991. He's a full five-time All-Star, was the first pitcher ever to win the Cy Young Award in each league, winning in the American League in 1972 with the Cleveland Indians and in the National League 6 years later in 1978 with the San Diego Padres. He, along with his brother Jim, are the second winningest brother combination in baseball history, second only to the knuckleballing Negro brothers, Phil and Joe. While pitching for the Seattle Mariners in 1982, he became the 15th member of the 300 Win Club. It is a pleasure to welcome the author of Me and the Spitter, Hall of Famer Gaylord Perry, to WLIE Sports Talk New York. Welcome, Gaylord.
Well, thank you very much. I'm out in the country now, so if this phone cuts off, it's not me. We just had to get back in touch with you, okay?
You got it. You know, you played semi-professionally in the early 50s for the Alpine Cowboys. You're signed by the San Francisco Giants on June 3rd, 1958 for $90,000, which at that time was a pretty big contract. Do you remember who scouted you and how they approached you to sign with them?
Yes, a guy named Tim Murchison was a scout for the San Francisco Giants, had been a scout for many, many years. He had signed Bob Bolin up here in South Carolina, and we played together in St. Cloud and in San Francisco also. So this guy had a couple of bird dog scouts to help him out, but Tim was an older gentleman and loved the game of baseball. He would go and see me play every inning, starting in my junior year and senior year. He was there all the time, and my mom said, "Hey, you got to hurry up and sign this guy. He comes at lunch every time, you know, feeding us out of house and home."
Now, you make your way up the Giants minor league ladder, making your debut April 14th, 1962, against the Cincinnati Reds. Al Dark pencils you in as a starting pitcher at Candlestick Park against the Reds. What do you remember most about that day and that start?
Well, I know the first hit I remember, because I wanted to remember that guy, Temple, was the second baseman of Cincinnati, and he was the first guy I got out and first guy I faced. So after that, we had a lot of great players. You had Penson, you had Robinson, you had Kaczynski, you had, I think, Bench and Rose might have been there in 62, and I'm not sure. But they were pretty well loaded.
In fact, taking a look, if you look at Baseball Reference, the pitcher that relieved him in that game, Don Larsen, pretty interesting as well. You have a breakout season in 1966 with a tremendous start, going 20-2 into August. You and Juan Marichal became known as the 1-2 punch to rival the famous Koufax-Drysdale combination of the Dodgers. The two of you would go 46-14 that season. What does it mean to have, you know, two aces in a staff, and what does that do to you? Does it push you? Are you competitive within each other?
Oh, no, we studied the opposing team, both us together, and we were pals. We ran and conditioned ourselves together, and, you know, we really paid attention to how to get the guys out, and Marichal could get them out so easy. I watched him high pitch, and I tried to, you know, get the high leg kick. I didn't have that until I saw Juan Marichal do that, and but we became great friends and still are, and I just love the guy, and he was awesome.
You know, there's a story out there that attributes your first manager, Alvin Dark, who once joked to reporters in 1963 that they'll put a man on the moon before Gaylord Perry hits a home run. On July 20th, 1969, just an hour after the Apollo 11 spacecraft carrying Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon, you hit your first home run of your career. So is that just an urban legend, or did Al Dark actually say that?
He actually said that to Harry Jupiter, a San Francisco Examiner writer, an afternoon paper, and I could hit him out in batting practice. I just laid in there for you, and I was hitting the old ballpark in Pittsburgh, and that's a big one. Hit some out, and then Harry Jupiter say, "Alvin, this kid here, Perry, is going to hit home runs for you." And he did say, "There'll be a man on the moon before he hits home run." And I think it was probably less than an hour after a man. I was on the mound pitching against Clyde Osteen and the Dodgers, and had a moment of silence while I was on the mound. The man that landed on the moon, and so bottom of that inning, I hit my first home run. True story.
That's unbelievable. So obviously, you know, anyone of my age and AJ's age, yeah, when they hear the name Gaylord Perry, you think spitball. You even titled your 1974 autobiography "Me and the Spitter." But despite your notoriety for doctoring baseballs, this is unfathomable. You were not ejected for throwing an illegal pitch until August 23, 1982, your 21st season in the majors. So I guess the question is, how often did you actually throw a spitball?
Well, I was innocent then when they threw me out, man. Come on. You know, I used to go shake. You know, we had some great opposing players, great attitudes and all. And I know with Cincinnati, I'd go shake Bench's hand, Rose and Morgan's hand. And, you know, like they were taking Ben practice, go up and say hello and good to see you. And I have my hand full of Vaseline, shake their hands. I said, what are you doing? Well, I'm pitching tomorrow night, just getting ready, you know. So they would think about that. They were great players, and also they had a great attitude, and you could, you know, talk with them, and you could brush them back, but just, you know, don't intentionally hurt them, you know. They were pretty good to you.
So how much was it, whether you threw it or not, just the impression that you did and the routine, going to your mouth, going to the cap, going to the belt, doing everything, made people think you were throwing it on every pitch, even when you weren't?
Well, I think it was very helpful. You know, it just something that I did it a couple of times, and I started throwing a forkball at the time because Lenny McDaniels, a relief pitcher with us, he threw a forkball, and Elroy Face in Pittsburgh, I threw a great forkball,
yeah.
And when May said, man, I can't hit that pitch, I want that pitch. So I taught myself the forkball because it was kind of a tricky pitch, but I did have big hands and long fingers, and it was very easy for me to do it. And it was just a great pitch. I picked it up in a couple of days, and it was just added to my rotation is what I needed. I needed another pitch, and that was the one I needed.
You know, here in New York, we have the infamous Nolan Ryan for Jim Fregosi trade. The Giants' version of that is trading you, who at the time was 32 years old, along with shortstop Frank Duffy, to the Cleveland Indians for then 29-year-old flamethrower Sam McDowell, the ace of the Indians staff. After that trade, you went on to win 180 more games in your career, while Sam McDowell only won 24 more. Well chronicled about Sudden Sam in John DeQuisto's book as well, you know, Sam's issues.
His personal issues.
At the time of the trade, were you surprised by it?
Oh, yes, I was, because in 71 and 70, I won a total of 40 games. You know, I love the Giants. Mr. Hearthstone, the owner, was just a great owner, and we just had a good organization, and I was very sad to leave. I had my home out there in California down south of the city, and my kids were in school, and we just still love the Giants. They're very special, so we're going to just hang in there with them.
We're talking to the Hall of Famer Gaylord Perry. You know, what adjustments did you make after pitching 10 years in the National League and moving over to the American League?
Just for our listeners who are not our age, understand things were very different then in terms of the leagues.
No interleague,
play,
no D.
And the leagues were very, very different. You didn't see the American League, you know, until the World Series. So, again, as Mark asked, how different was it switching leagues?
Well, we saw them in spring training, Cleveland and the Angels. So we got a little bit of that, but I depended on my catcher. Ray Foster was my catcher in Cleveland that year. We go over the hitters, the manager and the coaches would go over hitters before, you know, a series game. That's how we kept high to pitch the guys. Ray Foster would come out and says, hey, don't throw this guy no changeup. He's a good changeup hitter. Don't throw him inside. He pulls the ball. So I depended on my catcher, and he did a great job. Then next year he gets traded, but we get Duncan out, and Duncan's just a great baseball man also. So and then I go to Texas from Cleveland. We've got Jim Sundberg. So I had some outstanding catches, and I give them more credit than anything else.
You obviously made those adjustments well. Your first season in the AL, 1978, you go 24-16, pitched to a sub-2 ERA, win your first of two Cy Young Awards. Just 2 years earlier, you came in second to Bob Gibson for the award. What was getting that first Cy Young Award? What did that mean to you?
It was very important. That means I could pitch a few more years. Maybe, some of the general managers said, well, he can still pitch, and it was very good for me, and it was just something that I still cherish very much. And in San Diego, I had the great Robbie Fingers in the bullpen, and he saved a lot of games for me. And it was just, a great year I had with a club that we didn't play too good, but had some promise there, and we finished the year pretty strong.
One of the big differences between the American League and the National League at the time, that's not true now, is the umpire is actually, the home plate umpire had a different stance.
Chest protector.
Because the American League umpire wore the big exterior chest protector. They would look over the catcher's head when they called a pitch. The National League umpires would look, crouch down more, and look over the catcher's shoulder, left or right shoulder, depending upon left-handed, right-handed batter. How different did that make the strike zones in each league, and how did you have to adjust in any particular way to that?
You said it right. You had to adjust in each league, and sometimes you had to adjust with each umpire because some of the umpires in the National League, you pitched 10 years there, but they had certain pitches they throw with balls, and you thought they were strikes. So you kind of had to deal with it, talk with them, and get them to take a better look at it. That's what I would do. And then you got over in the American League, and it was more of a breaking ball league, so you had to really get the umpire to stay with the pitch. Don't call it too quick, because maybe some of them don't break as much, some break more. So, you got your hitters, you study your hitters, and you really have to know the umpire, too. So all those things work together.
You continued to be the Cleveland Indians staff ace until 1975. You went 70-57, 27 games over 500 during a time that the Indians never finished above fourth place. You actually accounted for 39% of all of Cleveland's wins during your time there. But the story goes that there was tension between you and player manager Frank Robinson, which led to your trade to Texas in June of 75. What was your relationship like with Frank, and why do you think you were traded?
Well, Frank was still a great hitter when he came over and was going to be a player manager. And in the first game, the first pitch up there, he hit a home run. That's how important he was to our lineup. And sometimes I wasn't too happy because he didn't come out and take batting practice, and sometimes he didn't play. And he was, I consider, our best RBI man and best hitter. And, we had trouble winning, and so when you – best hitter don't play, you do get a little upset, and you want them in there.
What is it about playing in Cleveland that makes it so difficult to win the World Series? They now have the longest World Series drought with the devastating loss to the Cubs this year, now 68 years. Is there something more difficult about playing in Cleveland than any other place?
Well, there's so much pressure on the guys pitching and playing defense, and a lot of time the game is lost by defense, but most of the time, the pitcher, both teams, when they played Atlanta Braves, Cleveland, both teams had great pitching. Probably Atlanta had a little bit better pitching and maybe a little more home runs, but that's the way it goes. Cleveland will be back. They're going to have a good team come the next few years. The Cubs are going to have a good team. Giants, L.A. Dodgers. They'll rebuild their clubs quickly.
The Indians trade you to the Rangers in exchange for pitchers Jim Bibby, Jackie Brown, Rick Waits. With the Rangers, you're once again formed with a great 1-2 punch with Fergie Jenkins. You earned 12 wins the remainder of that season, Fergie 11 during the remainder of 75. Then you'd be part of a Rangers rotation that was really, this is a pretty incredible rotation. Doyle Alexander, Burt Blyleven, Doc Ellis, and yourself. You enjoyed your time so much with Texas that later on in your career you would request to be traded back to Texas. What was it about playing for the Rangers that you enjoyed so much?
Well, they had a good stadium to pitch in. Plus, the weather was pretty warm. I like hot weather, and it suited me just fine. It was a lot of fun playing in Texas. I played 2 years in the minor leagues all through Texas with the Giant organization, so I kind of felt like I was, my second home was in Texas, and I really enjoyed it. And San Diego, we weren't going anywhere there, just in the bottom, so it was a better team in Texas.
But your time in San Diego is known for a feat that you were due. Before the 1978 season, Padres acquired you from Texas in exchange for middle reliever Dave Tomlin and $125,000. You end up winning your second Cy Young Award. At that point, you're 39 years old, which at the time was the oldest of any previous winner. You go 21-6 for the Padres, and you know, you win the second Cy Young Award. Your 21 wins in 78 accounted for 25% of the Padres' victories all year long. You were the first pitcher ever to win the Cy Young Award in both leagues. It's now been accomplished five more times since then. But what was the feeling when you did it, being the person to do something that had never been done in the history of baseball to that point?
Well, it really gave a lot of clubs the opportunity to trade for me or sign me up because, you know, you play like in Cleveland and that year, 1975, I just needed to be somewhere else, and that helps out when other clubs want you, and they paid a big price, and luckily I did good for them. So that's something that you have to. I enjoyed playing in Texas because of 2 years in the minor leagues in that area. It was just great, and I like the hot weather, so I was happy to go back to Texas.
Pretty good company have now joined you. Max Scherzer, Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Roy Halladay are the other five that have won it in both leagues. You retired in 1983 after pitching for eight teams, the Giants, the Cleveland Indians, Texas Rangers twice, San Diego Padres, New York Yankees, Atlanta Braves, Seattle Mariners, and Kansas City Royals. You're elected to the Hall of Fame in 1991, nominated as a finalist for the Major League Baseball All-Century Team. In 1999, the Sporting News ranked you 97th on their list of 100 greatest baseball players. Looking back on your career, what's the one thing you're most proud of and the one thing you regret the most?
Well, I was proud of my whole career. I played like 22 years in the big leagues. It was great. I played 4 years in minor leagues, and you get a lot of friends that you still keep up with today, and it was just great. So, you know, now and then it's going to be the other team's luck. They get some big hits. Maybe just out in the reach of your infielders and outfielders, and that's just part of the game. And they say, well, he hasn't got it anymore, and they trade, and then you have a good year. So, but I love the game. I know how important it was to win when you pass 35 years old. You better win, because if you don't, they're gonna say, yeah, you're too old. And I heard that so many times. You know, he's 40 years old, and he's this and that, but. I loved it. I told him I could still pitch, and luckily I had some good teams that got me some runs.
Gaylord, thank you so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
Okay, y'all have a good one. Thank
you.
You
too.
Bye-bye.
Gaylord Perry, the first man to win the Cy Young Award in both leagues in Baseball Hall of Fame class of 1991.